The other person we have in studio today, and I'm delighted, is our co-host for this show, special co-host, and that's Randy Peck. He's a patent lawyer with Warner Norcross and Judd. You've been on with us before, Randy, but it's good to have you in studio.
Well, thanks. It's good to be here for the first time.
You see the crazy band we have?
I do. Yeah, it's a lot more fun to be here in person.
I was just going to say, if there was a webcam where people could see what's going on, wow, would we have to clean up our act.
Well, one of the reasons we have you in here is to talk, because patents have been in the news this week a lot, and we figured we wanted to get somebody who's on the inside of it. You're a patent lawyer. Just a little bit of background. Your background, if I remember the first time we talked, is you were was for engineering?
Yeah, my initial degree was in chemical engineering going to law school.
And you went to law school on top of that?
Yeah.
Wow.
After having such a great degree like chemical engineering, why law?
I got to say, I disappointed a few people in my family.
I can imagine so.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Because there was a lot more time you were adding on to it as well.
It was.
Now, is that a kind of a necessary combination for a patent lawyer?
To do the type of patent law that I do, yes, it is. You don't have to be an engineer to go to court and litigate cases. But to prosecute with a U.S. Patent Office, you do have to be an engineer or a scientist of some type.
Okay. Well, a lot of things
happen. You got to know what you're doing, right?
You got it.
Well, that's exactly. You have to be able to talk knowledgeably about that industry in particular, right?
Exactly, yes.
And that's the key to it. So on Warner Norcross and Judd, are there other lawyers there who are specialized in other fields like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We cover the gamut from electrical engineering to mechanical engineering to environmental engineering to chemical engineering.
So all those folks are all engineers? I mean, they're in their particular fields, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. You kind of marry your law practice based on your engineering background.
Good Lord, how
do you... And you know, when we talk about U.S. patent law, while it's complicated, it's understandable. It's really tough to really understand international patent law because it seems like every country has a different patent law and different terms.
They absolutely do.
And prior art means something different in different countries.
Oh, wait a minute,
Gary. How do you get your arms around that?
Well, I have to give a lot of bad news about China quite a bit.
Yeah,
when
I can imagine.
We'll figure out how to get a patent or enforce a patent there. But essentially, you know, you have to work closely with local patent attorneys in each country where you do business and sort of abide by each law independently of one another.
Well, let's step back. You said something, Gary. I don't know if it's true or not, but that patents are kind of easy to understand. If it were so, how have we had this Apple-Samsung thing dragging on for eons?
Well, let's be honest. They want to make it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be at times to argue for more money. But
And now, those patents are probably international patents, right?
They have
to be, right?
Yep.
Samsung doesn't even, you know, it's probably not Samsung U.S.
Right.
It's probably Samsung headquarters, parent company in Japan.
And we see them fighting it out here in the U.S., but what you don't see in the U.S. media as much is the exact same battle is occurring right now in Korea, in Europe, in Japan, in China. So it's
Tell me, do you think that the whole notion of patents is kind of broken?
I would say no. I would say that there's some frustration, but most of the frustration and most of the media attention now is in this software realm, which is you know, such a unique beast in and of itself, just because the technology is incrementally improved so quickly compared to anything else.
Well, you know, I'm a little bit confused. Well, not confused, but, you know, I have noticed that, for example, if I create, I don't know, an invention, a microphone, and then I have it manufactured over in China, and I got it patented here, but, you know, they're building them over there, and in three factories down the road, they're making knockoffs like they're going crazy. How do you control that?
Well, if you have a U.S. patent,
you don't control it, right?
It's, right. I mean, it's territorial, so you can stop someone from making or selling it in the U.S. or importing it in the U.S., but you can't control anything else that's occurring outside the U.S. And so commonly they'll make it in China and try to import it, and you have to try to stop them where they're importing and have it destroyed.
Randy Peck, we're going to come back with you and talk about trolls.
Okay.
And some other things that have to do with patents as well. Randy Peck, patent attorney with us here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. By the way, if you would like to find out more information about the people that we talk with here, like Randy Peck, a patent lawyer with Warner Norcross and Judd, you can go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and there's some more information there. By the way, Randy, I don't know if you saw on our homepage, I picked up an image off of the Internet that it's a picture of President Barack Obama, and it says, "Don't feed the trolls." And that whole issue of trolls has been a very, very big issue in patents, hasn't it? And it's been primarily because of trolls being people who don't necessarily, they aren't the inventors,
Well, sometimes they are the inventors.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Essentially, the definition of what a troll is has sort of changed over time, but
okay.
the common accepted definition now is essentially a non-practicing entity.
Okay.
So it's a party that has a patent. They may be the ones who invented it. They may have purchased it from another, but they essentially have a patent, but not a company making a product that's
okay.
associated
okay.
with
it. Okay, so it's like they're gathering these things and then kind of building a war chest with them sometimes.
You got it.
And then they will go after people to have them to license to use that particular thing, even though they're not involved in the process.
Exactly.
So, Randy, is this similar to back in the old days when the internet first got started and people would get websites and hold on to them even though they weren't, you know, I bought GM.com.
What was that called, parking or something like that?
But I'm not GM.
You could argue it's similar to that cyber squatting.
There was a cyber squatting, right.
In terms of enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
But in theory, a patent, you know, you can't go out and get a patent on something that is so obvious or something that other people are manufacturing. So in theory, at one point in time, whoever got that patent actually had to have a novel idea. So it's a little bit distinguishable from okay. just knowing exactly where the market is going and grabbing that. But yes, it is sitting back, hoping that someone goes into that area and wants what you have, even though you're not doing anything.
Okay, but now let's divide them between them and yourself, for instance. You are there to defend your client's patent in a process that they're developing, in chemical engineering, for instance.
Sure.
A paint for a car, whatever it may be. So they're actually putting the paint out. That's one class of, if you will, patent, and then the people who protect that. And then you have this other group of people. And there have been efforts to try to stop that or to reform that. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. Where are we in that process?
Well, there's some good news and some bad news. The good news is there's essentially a lot of these startup LLCs that will come up with 500 different umbrella companies, all with the same patents that they hold.
Yeah.
And they'll send out a million demand letters to everyone they think
right.
may be infringing, and it's frustrated a lot of people. So some individual states...
Excuse me, and part of the thing is it's almost like, you wouldn't call it a blackmail, would it be like, you know, that they will go after you legally, and if they have a big enough war chest, they can go after a small company, and the company says, that's it, we can't afford to be in court forever.
They'll send a letter and say, give me $10,000 or I'm going to sue you for $5 million. Right. And even if I don't win, you're going to spend more than $10,000 defending this lawsuit.
Exactly. Okay.
So
okay.
a lot of people do look at it like blackmail.
No, okay. So I wasn't too far off in my term. I didn't want to be too strong. So what's the good news?
Well, the good news, there was an act in Congress. The bad news is it was sort of withdrawn or put on hold recently. There have been two recent Supreme Court decisions in the last month or so that have essentially made it easier to slap down a patent troll if you're a defendant in terms of fee shifting and making them pay your legal bills and things like that. And so the ball has moved, even though that the legislation in Congress has been killed.
Yeah. By the way, folks, I posted one of our news items this week was about Senator Patrick Leahy, who was the head of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. And apparently there had been broad, and in fact, overwhelming bipartisan support for the patent reform bill in the House. The White House was ready to sign it. And when it got to Leahy, he just said, no, I don't think we're ever going to come to an agreement on this, and he torpedoed it, took it off the docket.
There's a lot of lobbyists, and for some good reason, because, you know, it's hard to have a one-size-fits-all legislation for patent trolls.
Of course.
Because when you want to talk about a non-practicing entity, you're essentially defining every garage inventor and every university that tries to come up with a new invention and then license it.
Universities were the big ones who were fighting that, weren't
right.
they?
Right. So U of M, as an example, has a tech transfer office where they'll take all of their inventions internally.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making and selling any products at the university. They're just trying to license their IP.
Right.
So in theory, they're a patent troll.
And IP would be intellectual property?
Correct.
Okay.
Including patents.
Right, right.
And so in that context, they could be viewed as a patent troll.
Okay.
Now, it's not the universities of the world who are out sending all these demand letters.
No.
But they also, of course, got on the lobbying circuit.
Yeah.
And I think that that's essentially why this was put on hold.
If you go to internetadvisor.net and go down to our news items for today, I have entitled it, Senator Leahy Kills Patent Reform for Now. And it's an article that was written by the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, I think it is.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think they're advocates for, they're advocates for net neutrality and especially going after patent trolls who have been, Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Yep.
You want to read more in depth on that and kind of the political background on that. On Monday, was it Tuesday that we had the verdict come down, that Apple and Samsung decided to stop the patent battle they had going on at court. Am I right?
Well,
or was it earlier?
Apple and Google have come to an agreement. Apple and Samsung have returned to the negotiation table, but they've not yet emerged.
But they're saying bad things to one. The lawyers are saying bad things to one another, Randy.
They are. They're saying a lot of bad things outside of court, and I don't think it's helping the negotiation much.
What's up with that? You're a lawyer. I mean, is it just they're going for more hours or what?
You know, Samsung's attorney is trying to refer to this battle by Apple as Apple's Vietnam, and Apple is trying to take those comments as saying that, you know, see, obviously Samsung's not serious about negotiating with us because look at these kind of comments and just a lot of posturing.
Traditionally, it's been said that Samsung opens these lawsuits up and drags them out for long periods of time so they can, while the lawsuit is going on, they can still continue to take advantage of the technology that they may be suing in that particular patent. And then once it gets to a point where, you know, it's not worth it anymore to them, then they'll go ahead and settle for it. Well, heck, by that time, they probably made $1 billion off of whatever it was, and so it's no problem to sell for it.
Well, they did certainly have an interest in some of the initial litigation to try to drag it out just so that they couldn't be forced to stop selling their phones.
Some of the early ones, phones, early models. Exactly. Do you see, as a patent lawyer, and I'm, you know, taking you as a, I'm going to call you a serious patent lawyer in the sense of you have clients who are actually producing these kind of products. Do you see any hope for reform in this, or is it because it looks like there's so much money in Washington right now on the lobby side that it's going to be next to impossible, even though you got all the political will, the House and the White House. It can get torpedoed at the last minute with a simple Judiciary Committee decision.
Well, unfortunately, I think that we're going to see a slight pause now that this has been put back on the back burner. But I am confident that we're going to see some legislation either at the state level or at the federal level to try to finally put a stop to some of these trolls.
In the state of Michigan, how are we doing? I mean, what's the state of our business here? Because this seems so critical to us. We're at a point where, like, we're almost getting off the ground here in terms of technology, especially technology, et cetera.
Well, I can't say that Michigan has been a leader in proposing new legislation to stop patent trolls, but other states have, and they've typically done it under the guise of consumer protection type laws. And they essentially say, if you are a patent troll who's sending these demand letters to businesses in our state and you're not doing any of the due diligence before you're sending out these letters and you're just trying to extract a settlement, then you're violating these consumer protection laws because you're not doing enough research to actually.
But we don't have those in Michigan? We don't have that kind of bite?
Not yet.
Wow. I mean, it would seem like that would be a real priority in terms of our legislature because of our being in this delicate position of building this, you know, technology hub that we have here. You know, Gary, I know you're involved in a lot of the stuff that's going on here as well in terms of technology.
I think they're really focused on the grand bargain to get Detroit out of bankruptcy, and they're focused on roads. Yeah. And there's probably a few people that will put a few cycles into patent reform, but you know, I think there's a lot bigger fish to fry here.
Yeah.
That's just my impression.
Vermont was one of the first states, and quite frankly, you know, once the initial bill in the U.S. Congress seemed to have so much bipartisan support, I think it was easy for the states at that point in time to say, well, this is going to get fixed at the federal level, so it doesn't need to be a concern of ours in the short-term future. Mm.
And in fact, it should be fixed there. It shouldn't be by state by state.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Randy, thanks so much for being in with us today. It was just good to have somebody who is involved in this at the ground floor level. Randy Peck is a patent lawyer with Warner, Norcross, and Judd in Southfield. There's a longer interview that I did with Randy earlier on after the Samsung and Apple decision came down that I'm going to be posting as well that you can listen to at length. Randy, thanks so much for coming in and being part of this.
Thank you, Foster. My pleasure.